Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect? Right now, the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon. You need a playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold right now. Shield your savings with Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com right now. noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. It's the Charlie Kirk Show. My speech at UCLA. I talk about the five major issues that separate us from the progressive wokes. And I also take a lot of questions from the audience. I think you'll love it. It's our final campus tour. So enjoy. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Please take a seat. I apologize for the line and all that. You know, it's very funny. My whole speech is about trying not to complain more than you produce. So I'm going to, like, spend 30 seconds on this. But I can't help but laugh, right? So I'm being told, you know, people want to come in and 20 students weren't on the list and, you know, they weren't let in. I said, boy, I wish our border worked that way, right? You know, what's our list? Your ID? Get the hell out of here. You're not here? Is it? Get the hell out. What a concept, right? I got to tell you, I have UCLA envy. I wish our border was as strong as the UCLA ticketing system. I really do. Why when you vote? No voter ID, but to get into UCLA, you got to have an ID. Are you on the list? No, sorry. But I'm a student here. Doesn't matter. Never heard of you. Get out of here. Watch the live stream. And we still had a really great turnout. It's really incredible. So thank you guys for waiting through all that. I really appreciate it. So, but it's really a great segue because it's so easy to just have your whole life centered around complaining. And I really believe it. The root of progressivism, leftism, wokeism is complaining more than you produce. If you produce more than you complain, you're usually on the right. If you complain more than you produce, you're usually on the left. That's not always true, but it's generally true. And you have to resist the temptation to allow carefully tailored complaints to dominate your life. It is easy to do that. It is easy to go pick up a random sign and while you're taking no personal responsibility for your life, march around and say, pay for my college, pay for my Wi-Fi, pay for my life. It's like, okay, what are you producing? No, I deserve it because, you know, I'm here and I deserve free college and reparations while we're at it. You know what's hard? It's hard to get a job. It's hard to wake up early. It's hard to stop engaging and indulging in your impulses at every possible turn. Production is hard, but production built the West. And what we're seeing right now is a series of ideas. I'm going to call them the woke. I don't love that term. That operates like a virus. Now, we're all experts in viruses over the last couple years, right? Highly contagious, spread around, you know, and certain things are supposed to be safe and effective, and maybe they're not, but that's a separate issue we could talk about later. But viruses, now that we are all experts in it, the woke mind virus, in my opinion, is and was and remains more dangerous and more lethal than anything COVID-19 was the last couple of years. This will destroy the country from within. I'm going to build out that argument. But understand that it is naturally tempting to embrace this set of ideas because it does not require you to do hard things to embrace the woke ideology. It allows for somebody else to produce so that you don't have to produce. So any one of us that are fighting for free markets, private property, borders, and I'm going to talk about the big differences. And it's not even a right or left thing. It honestly is the divide is no longer right versus left. We could talk about that stuff. It's civilization versus the abyss. And where these ideas are going to bring us is the closest to the abyss that you could possibly imagine. And we all as human beings search for meaning. One of the most important books, I hope all of you read it and study it, Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And what it's an incredible book. He's a Holocaust survivor in a concentration camp. And his whole idea is that you have a series of choices you make every single day. And you can choose whether or not you're going to view difficulty, pressure, as an opportunity to be happy and joyful, or as nothing but negativity. And what I love about Viktor Frankl is this is a guy who lost his wife in a concentration camp, a Holocaust survivor, that's telling you, you must make a conscious choice every single day to be happy. Newsflash, you might have a tough life. You probably don't, because you go to UCLA and you live in paradise, okay? You definitely don't have a tougher life than Viktor Frankl did. And he himself built an entire worldview that we must find something to fill that meaning. And to the woke's credit, to the left's credit, they've done a much better job than we as conservatives have at advertising and evangelizing young people to believe to fill their big gap of meaning with a certain worldview. They've done a much better job. We as conservatives, you know, we're too busy building businesses, hopefully building families, you know, going to work, trying to save money, whatever you want to call it. While the other side, they've dedicated their life through the ideological institutions, through colleges, through one right here, media institutions, to trying and convince a generation to believe in a subset of ideas that will ruin and destroy and erode the entire civilization around us. And I kind of saw it on display today. We, you know, we had a great time out there, and there was this Hamas rally. I don't like it when I say that, but that's what it was. And, you know, a bunch of people screaming, you know, from the river to the sea, let Palestine be free, which is the moral equivalent of, you know, swastika on the campus of UCLA, the elimination of Jewish people. And I looked, it was so incredible that I'd say maybe half were people that you would think would be, you know, Arab Muslim. The other half were people that were just showing up because it's kind of the new thing to protest. And you have to wonder, you're like, okay, you know, that gives you some source of meaning. But if you're constantly engaging in just a protest against an oppressor, against something larger than yourself, you're not going to be a happy person. You're not. Instead, I mean, it's okay to protest here and there if there's injustice. But I mean this absolutely seriously. Like, how many of those people can point Gaza on the map and tell me at least some historical fact? Probably very few. But they've been like wound up. Like, I saw a TikTok video, and now I'm a geopolitical expert. Like, yeah, I mean, probably not, honestly. And by the way, while you're so worried about injustice, like, are you worried about slavery happening on the southern border? Like, the children being that are sex trafficked in this city right now? Like, spare me your lectures, like social justice warrior UCLA, that somehow the people of Gaza are your concern. You didn't care about the people of Gaza until all of a sudden someone on TikTok told you to get angry for their agenda. You're a useful idiot for their agenda is what you are. And they're winding you up the same way they did for the George Floyd stuff, the same thing they did for the BLM. And so, said differently, the woke want to destroy a world that they themselves could never build. It is very hard to build things. It is easy to tear them down. It does not take talent to tear apart a bicycle. I have a year-old daughter, and she'll destroy everything. That's easy. That's what infants do. Adults build stuff. And as simply as I can put it, at the basis of left-wing progressive ideology is trying to have people never grow up. To have them remain perpetually as infants. To complain more than they produce and disassemble more than they build. Understand that to build beautiful things, including, you know, this city, which is being destroyed, might I add you, by the very same people that I am mentioning. This city, Los Angeles, one of the most amazing cities, was once one of the most amazing cities, is deteriorating from within. Why is it deteriorating? Is it because a meteor hit? Is it because some? No, it's because of bad ideas. Oh, let's not lock up criminals because of racial justice. Let's allow the homeless to run the streets. Let's not evict people from their homes. By the way, have you tried to buy a home in Los Angeles recently? Prices are going up. And you think about and people are leaving in massive, massive numbers. And you wonder, where are they going to? Are they going to other places? Like, how many people, I'm really curious, leave L.A. for San Francisco? Like, probably not a lot of people. It's like trading one, you know, I'm not going to say that. I have this whole theory. If it wasn't for the weather, I think, like, 800,000 people would live in California. I have a whole theory on this, that, you know, you wake up and it's, like, 61 degrees and it's that perfect. And you're like, you know, I could live under socialism. It's just fine. It's not that bad. And it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you check your phone and it's like snowing in Chicago and it's 71 degrees. And you're like, you know, I can endure it. I honestly believe It is the largest open-air hostage experiment in the history of American politics. What will people tolerate with good weather? I think it's really the question that will be, if it wasn't for the weather, the place would completely collapse. But understand that it makes you embrace delusions and insanity in order to satisfy the lowest parts of your humanity. And this is really important because there are some parts of nature that we should appreciate, and there are some parts of nature that we should restrain. We are all naturally inclined to have envy and greed and resentment. We're all naturally wired that way. Again, if you just study children, you'll learn so much. You're like, wow, we have to teach the child to say thank you. One time, 1,000 times, 5,000 times. It doesn't naturally happen. We have to teach them to appreciate that things don't just come ex nihilo out of nothing. And even further than that, when you implement what I will call the woke, which is honestly ideas so dumb you need a PhD to actually advance them and to believe in them, which is, you know, men can give birth, borders don't matter, and you implement these ideas, people's lives do not materially improve. So we've tried this for now a couple years, okay? We're living through a cultural revolution post-2020. What does the evidence show? L.A., San Francisco, Bay Area, Philadelphia, New York, Chicago. It's not like one city. I could name 10. Are these places flourishing, increasing in population, businesses thriving there, people are happier than ever? No. And in every one of these isolated areas where you try to emphasize the feelings of a criminal over the implementation of the rule of law, at every single one of these places where you allow district attorneys to have no cash bail, so the most insane things ever, people's lives actually fall apart. But what drives them? This is what's important. And this is why you'll see somebody at the, you know, Free Palestine rally with a gay flag. It makes no sense, right? It's just, again, it's okay. Explain that. If you're a person who's gay and you go into Gaza, that's not going to work well for you. Okay. I could say something else, but I'm not going to say it. But I'll just stop there. So, should I say it? Yeah. It's like I have this. You see, Andrew didn't like this one line, so I don't know if I'm going to use it. But I'll say how I used to say it. Okay. Is that they would be given flying lessons off buildings, okay, if they went to Gaza, which is true. You know, oh yeah, we need a free Palestine. I don't think you really know what you're advocating for. It's just hilarious. But anyway, intersectionality is the law of the left, or the rule of the land. And I'll explain this as quickly as I possibly can, where you teach an entire generation to view the world a certain way. Oppressor versus oppressed. And the kind of thought crime that needs to be said is that America has problems, we have injustices, but we have far more blessings than we have injustices in this country. We have far more opportunity. I'm not going to say here and not say everyone's been treated beautifully and wonderfully, but largely, more times than not, you're given an opportunity to have your hard work rewarded. That's a big deal. So therefore, I don't really want to hear your complaining. I wonder what you're going to do to improve the material standing in your life. But that doesn't make people on the left politically more powerful. So therefore, they write these books, you know, Intro to Critical Theory, Paulo Freire, all that, Herbert Marcuse, Michel Foucault, where they'll say, okay, the world is really divided between oppressor and the oppressed. And so they use that with race, right? We saw that for about 2.5 years. And honestly, one of the good things is the country has moved in the right direction on race in the last couple of years. Affirmative action is less popular than ever before. All the CRT stuff is less popular than ever before. One of the victories of the American right is how successfully we pushed back against all of these race lies that were being peddled on our institutions. Not totally gone, but it's one of the lesser appreciated victories. So you could apply this to anything, right? Rich versus poor, or men versus women. So they view everything not just through class struggle, but through power struggle. And it goes directly into the Israel-Palestine issue. So if you train a generation to think a certain way, don't be shocked when they start thinking that way when it applies to everything. And so, you know, I get asked the question, Charlie, why do American kids care so much about, they don't care about Palestine. They think they're caring about liberation and smashing the oppressor. Now, I'll be the first one to march alongside anybody if there is a legitimate oppressor that is doing something so disproportionately wrong. For example, I don't know, the Department of Justice going after a former president for running for office because you're afraid he might win. I think that's an oppressive thing. And they say, oh, yeah, no, he committed. Okay, yeah, give me a break. I'm all for hearing legitimate feedback of things that might not be structured the right way. However, what is not legitimate is applying that same lens as a working matrix as a way to live and operate your life by. And I'll just say this as a side note, which is if you want to live a happy life, if you don't want to be one of the members of your generation that's the most depressed, suicidal, alcohol addicted, and drug addicted in history, if, I will tell you this, you will not live a happy life if you go around looking for people to blame for your problems. It is impossible. If you want to stay unhappy, by the way, some people want to stay unhappy. You know why? Happiness takes work. It doesn't happen to you. It is a daily labor to be happy. You have to do hard things. You have to say no sometimes when things feel good. You have to build things. You have to resist natural temptations. So anyway, since the woke ideas are so unpopular and they're against the natural law, this is where you start to get tyranny. And this is very, very important, is that tyranny sometimes comes out. Sometimes you just get people that love to be in power and they want to tell you to live your life. Like Dr. Fauci should be in Gitmo, terrible guy, right? I think this guy loves being in charge of other people's lives. Okay. Now, I'm sure you all have different opinions of, you know, Gavin Newsolini and kind of what he's done here in California. But I mean, look, honestly, I look at him, I say he's probably more like prom king, right? He wants to be popular. He goes to China and like mows down poor Chinese kids when he's playing basketball. Like, what is that all about, by the way? That was one of the weirdest things. Like, you know, it's behind the back, boom, poor little 8-year-old Chinese kid. Like, geez. Whew. He wants to be popular. And so I don't know the intentions of this. People that I've worked with them say, look, he'll do what is the most politically expedient and popular. However, if you embrace a subset of woke ideas, I'll just use Newsom for an example, and you want to be popular, you realize that what you're doing is unpopular. And therefore, you are left with a choice. You can either feel the reckoning of the people, or you then can become a mini tyrant and silence the opposition. And what it ends up doing is you get suppression, censorship, outright authoritarian methodology, where people they realize, well, these ideas aren't exactly popular. Like, I don't know, chopping off the parts of a 12-year-old and calling it gender affirming care and not telling the parent, not exactly pop. Just so you understand how insane this state has become, you guys probably know this, that there was a bill in the California legislature, regardless of your opinion on the trans thing, this should not even be a question, okay, is that there was a bill in the California legislature to say that you have to at least notify a parent if a child in school is receiving gender-affirming care. Just like, hey, Mrs. Smith, your 12-year-old is on Lupron. Thanks for the heads up. Appreciate it. And they shot down the bill in the California legislature. They say, no, a parent should not get in the way of a child discovering who they really are. And I'm going to get to that in a second because the family is a big part of this. But that's not I refuse to believe a majority of Californians actually think that's a good idea. And so they have to lie about it, or they have to suppress or censor or go after the side. So in some ways you get outright tyranny, authoritarianism, and despotism as an outgrowth of these bad ideas. Now, as one of the other kind of wrinkles of this, you get decolonization, right? So if you view everything through an oppressor and oppressed lens, they look at Israel and they immediately say, That's a colonizing type project. They view America the same way. It's a Marxist idea that they apply to Israel, and they're saying the same thing when it comes to indigenous and native lands, and it is nothing more than an excuse to try and accomplish the five big differences between those of us that live in reality and those that call themselves wokies or whatever you want to call them. And this is my final point, then we'll do some questions, which I know is the most fun. And this is not right versus left. Let me be very clear. All five of these things, I would be in agreement with a classical liberal. All five. Every one of these five, Alan Dershowitz and I agree on. Yet we vote differently. I want you to understand, this is not a political thing. It has political implications. But the five things I'm going to mention used to be universally accepted in the country. Now it's considered to be controversial or inflammatory. The first is a little bit nerdy, but it's very, very important, which is private property. You cannot have a free society if people can't keep the stuff they earn, period. You cannot have a free society if the government can take a majority of your labor. You cannot have it, which includes, by the way, rewarding success. I'm going to get to success in a second, but owning stuff and saying, this is mine, not yours, stay away, is a bedrock principle of Western civilization. Taking people's stuff away under the guise of equity. Now, some of you in this room might say, but I want a fairer world, and I want, all that's fine and it's just. The question is, are you willing to take somebody else's stuff and redistribute it with force under the guise of fairness? And if true, You must apply the rule to yourself. And this is the one thing I will say. And every political movement has contradictions. The right has far fewer contradictions. But I find it so interesting that the people that are lecturing us about open borders live in gated communities, that don't want school choice, send their kids to private schools. The people that lecture us about crime are able to hire bodyguards and, you know, live in kind of like these very tailored communities. That's fine. If you have these beliefs, you have to then apply it to yourself. So, for example, if you are a star student and you're in honor roll, you must be willing to give your grade to someone who has an F so that you both have C's, because equity is the purpose of the revolution, isn't it? The only fair way to do grading at UCLA is we all get C's. Better yet, if you're an Asian or you're a white student and you got an A, you must give your grade to a person of color, and you must sit aside and say, I don't want to go to law school, I don't want to go to residency, because viva la revolution. And if you don't believe that, then you're going to have some explaining to do. I'm not going to say you're a hypocrite, but you must apply the standard. I have no such problem with my worldview, nor do our Turning Point USA students. They say, no, I worked hard, I deserve an A, don't take it from me. What a concept. So number one is private property. Number two, I talked about this, it's borders, okay? You cannot have free societies without borders. One of the reasons why the media hates Israel is that they have strong borders. They cannot stand it. They want an international globalist project of the free flow of people moving from one place to the other. And I just find it so interesting. It's not just Israel that wants strong borders. Do you notice that Egypt and Jordan don't want to take the people of Gaza? It's like, oh, really, if these people are such rock stars, why is it that the Jordan says, we're not going to take it? I thought you guys are all like, you know, Muslim brothers under Allah or whatever. Like, what is, you know, we don't want those. Oh, hold on a second. Then why should we take them into our, first of all, we shouldn't take them into our country, America. And borders is a way to differentiate where government power stops. By definition, you want limited government? Have borders. Have sovereign nations. It says, my power, my authority stops right at this very place. Borders is where good ideas can begin and bad ideas start, or vice versa. Right now, we do not have a southern border in this country. Just under Joe Biden, 8 million people have illegally entered into this country. I don't care if you are right or if you are left or progressive. That is an indefensible position, to have 8 million people illegally enter into the country. And they say, well, it's under justice, because these people are poor. First of all, they totally scam our asylum system, okay? And they'll lie, and some of them, not all of them, are, you know, smuggling and trafficking children. But we must be very morally clear, and this is a teaching that built the West that's originally from the Bible, but it's that you shall not favor a rich person or a poor person in the administration of justice. Just because somebody is poor does not make it okay to steal or to break into somebody's home. And we flirted with that idea, by the way, during all the race riots. Like, oh, well, you know, they're poor, so it's okay if they steal, you know, the big screen TVs. Never is that okay. Number three, obvious, and I use the Alan Dershowitz test, right? Alan Dershowitz has been kicked out of Harvard. He's written, you know, 60 books. He's a liberal. He doesn't like Trump, even though he represented him, which is hilarious. He's a true free speech liberal, and that's number three, which is speech, okay? That free speech is a fundamental prerequisite to human flourishing and to the advancement of civilization as we know it. And speech includes that you must be okay with somebody you consider to be morally repugnant having the same rights to speak that you do. And this is what drives me crazy. Do you know more than half, I don't know at this campus, but half of students across the country say that we should be able to censor hate speech. That is a really troubling sign, everybody, because you know what? They consider almost everything on the right, quote unquote, hate speech. By the way, what a boring society it would be if we, I'm just being honest, I think that it's awesome for the country to have Joe Rogan do what Joe Rogan does. You know, have conversations about ayahuasca and aliens and all that stuff. I think free speech is not only a moral good, I think it makes life worth living. I think a society that polices speech polices thoughts. It polices values. And here's the one thing I will say, and I got to brag on our conservative students here. We are willing to have the tough conversations. I cannot always say it's the same for those on the left. Because speech is violence. How many times have you guys heard this? Speech is violence. Speech is violence. Well, maybe speech is a threat, is what you're really saying. is that if people can speak, your bad ideals will be exposed and you might persuade. Now, this campus is, you know, it's not exactly the easiest place to put on an event. But I'll tell you this. I'll give you example after example after example of people protesting and petitions to try to prevent us from coming on campus. You think about it. Wait a second. This is an optional event where you have to wait like an hour and a half to get in. You have to do a specific ticketing thing. And, you know, you go here and even you disagree to the front of the line. So all in all, it's like 60 minutes of programming, right? And someone is super worried that Charlie Kirk gets 60 minutes at UCLA. Because deep down, an honest leftist, a true Bolshevik, someone who's committed to the revolution, knows that Charlie Kirk in 60 minutes can undo 4 years of left-wing Marxist indoctrination. Okay, number 4, 5, and then we'll get to questions. 4, the family. The family is a bedrock of any civilization. I look to the scriptures. It says, honor your mother and father so that you may live long to the land of which you are in. You dishonor your parents. You dishonor what's come ahead of you. Family is everything to the advancement of a free society. In Mao's China, they created 10 categories, and the children and the parents were tied together, so the parents were incentivized to either radically go with the Red Party or the children to turn in their parents. By the way, we're living through a very, very soft version of American Maoism, and it's getting firmer and firmer. I could talk about the family at length, but what I would love anybody here tonight to justify, and I mean this, you can come to the mic and I'm open, it's not a trick, to tell me the argument against notifying a parent that your child is receiving drugs to quote-unquote change their gender, which doesn't even change their gender, it just chops off their parts or stops puberty, okay? And it is a concerted effort to stop the raising of children and instead have them go look for partnership with the government. You destroy the family, you expand government. Number 5, this is the biggest of all topics, how you view success. It's the lens of how you view success. I don't know about you, when I see somebody very successful, my gut instinct, and I encourage it for you because it's just a happier way to live, is, wow, that person probably had an awesome idea, worked really hard, was able to deliver some big value, and there's something I want to learn from them. Far too often, and by the way, the right at times engages in this. This one is somewhat all across the board, but it's more built into progressive Marxist ideology. You see somebody with a big home, and you say, they must have stole their way. They must have lied their way. They must have cheated their way. They must have conned a lot of people to get there. And it goes to zero-sum thinking. In a market economy, just because someone gets richer, it does not mean somebody got poorer. In fact, you create a product and other people's lives improve along the way. Entrepreneurs are modern day problem solvers. And what we are doing is we are disincentivizing that next generation of entrepreneurs to take the risks, to go big and to solve those problems. Why would you go create the next big company, the next Salesforce, whatever, he's a communist, by the way, but that's a separate issue. Why would you go create the next big idea if you can't keep what you've earned? I'll just go be a desk worker bureaucrat and I'll just, you know, take government, you know, welfare. Ingenuity and innovation is impossible if people can't keep their reward. I am very afraid, and in some ways it's both on the right and the left, but it's much more on the left, that we are becoming a resentful-filled society. When we see success, we think of them as robber barons, not as something we could learn from. With that, let's do some questions, everybody. Thank you for sitting through that. A couple ground rules. Here's the thing. So if you disagree, you can go to the front of the line. It's a generally a conservative-ish audience. If somebody comes up and says something that you deem to be wacky or weird, do not boo that person. Do not interrupt that person. Please show our progressive friends that have come here tonight the respect that they don't show us conservatives. So let's live out our values tonight. Okay, everybody? It's not easy to get up and to do that. So here is the line. If you guys want to start forming, don't be shy. We'll talk to you guys. Students get priority. I know we have some community members and stakeholders as well that came here, but students do get priority since it is at UCLA, but we will try to get to as many questions as possible. And yes, ma'am, first question.
Hi, I'm Tara. I'm from Godspeed Calvary Church with Rob McCoy. Saw you speak there. Amazing. So one thing that he said that I thought was really interesting, that 80% of young adults ages 25 and younger support Hamas. And I was wondering why you think that is.
Yeah, it kind of piggybacks on what I was saying earlier. If you have a thinking system, if you have a specific matrix of how you view the world, they apply that to the Israel-Hamas type issue, right? So oppressor and oppressed, that there must be a good guy or a bad guy embedded in every single type. And of course, there is some truth to a good guy, bad guy type thing. They have it exactly wrong, by the way, okay? It's exactly inverted. But to be perfectly honest, some of it is Jew hatred. It's not that, that's not the easiest or most simple explanation, but it really is a disdain for Western sovereign nations that respect many of the ideas that I talk about. And a question that needs to be answered is, okay, why did the people of Gaza and the government of Gaza prioritize in their charter killing Jews more than creating a wealthy and vibrant and peaceful society? Now, I understand there's difficulties, but they receive hundreds of millions of dollars in external aid. And instead of using that aid to benefit their people, they build rockets and terror tunnels. They put human shields and they use hospitals as a way to insulate them against attacks. And so what needs to be reiterated is that the way that they could have actually gotten back at Israel is turning the Gaza Strip, which is arable land, by the way, right on the Mediterranean, it's gorgeous, into one of the wealthiest places of square miles on the planet. But that would mean that you have to embrace a very specific and certain value system in order to do that. And it's the values that are the issue. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Kaylee. I just was told I disagreed, so they pushed me up here.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to. If you don't, first of all, thank you for your courage. Can we have a different way of doing that instead of like a fire code thing?
Okay.
What is this, Game of Thrones? Like you got to walk. People are going to start throwing stuff. I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
No worries. Like I'm a liberal and I don't mind talking to people.
Great.
I basically just wanted to bring up, I mean, you talked a lot, you know, about UCLA campus and people and how people like can't listen to things and liberals don't like hearing and like whatever. And I mean, I just wanted to point out that I didn't hear anyone like make any comments or anything. And I've even learned in one of my communications classes about how one time at UC Berkeley, there was this, conservative Republican talking there and they were yelling. And we had that conversation about how that's, you know, how basically that's not okay. So, I mean, I guess I just kind of want to point out how, you know, you're making a lot of assumptions coming in here, but I think everyone listened. And I told the girl that I hadn't come up with my question yet, and she pushed me here. So
that's great.
That's all my thoughts.
No,
right now.
I just and you would agree that we shouldn't ban hate speech or censor what would be considered hate speech.
No, exactly. Right? It's good to be having these conversations.
Okay, no,
like my dad is a far right QAnon conspiracy theorist, but here I am. So, yeah.
I maybe you can learn something from him. So.
Yeah. I'm. You know,
honor your mother and father so that may live long in the land of which you're in.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ironic, you know, the things you talk about, because, like, my dad doesn't work. He spends all of his time on QAnon and everything, doesn't support his family, like, hasn't had a job since he was disbarred as a lawyer. So it's pretty ironic being with here, him and listening to you, to be honest. But, yeah, okay. I mean, I love you, Dad. That's why we had an intervention. But, yeah, it's really tough. And I know these are, like, some of the biggest things in my life, but I...
Well... I will say I'm glad you listened to the speech. You are in the minority of the generation. The majority of the generation believes hate speech should be censored. And God bless you for being here tonight. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming tonight, Charlie. I really enjoyed your speech. And I'll begin with, though I adamantly disagree with many of your views, I strongly believe in the importance of keeping the gates of discourse open and thriving throughout our country, especially here on college campuses. At the core of a thriving democracy is the presence of well-mannered dialogue and conversation. Of course, dialogue, at least in the form of it being enlightening, requires the parties involved to be willing to engage in productive, empathetic, and honest conversations. However, these days we see a lack of this on both sides. So my question is, how do we move forward with our current state of low quality discourse, and what needs to happen to better engage with those of different parties? And then I'll add for you, and as a political figure, will you reflect on the manner in which you discuss political issues and notice possible areas in which your style of argumentation increases inter-party division? Thank you.
Okay, sure. I'll reflect on it. I will say I will be very proud of how we allow people who disagree at every single event to come to the front of the line. We've made that a rule over a decade, and I think that's a really good thing, and I wish more people would do that. But look, I will say – let's just use a huge example. Was it the American right or largely the American left that engaged in active censorship in the 2020 election?
The left.
Okay. So do you think who has a greater speech problem, like a tolerance of different idea, right or left? And I don't mean to overly politicize it. I just want to try to isolate it so we can fix it.
Sure, absolutely. I actually wasn't disagreeing with you on this point. It was more so of that I do agree it is the left that's in question here, but I wanted your opinion on the state of discourse. And
the state of discourse is awful. It's terrible. When I'll give you an example. This didn't happen here, and I was surprised, to be honest. I went to go speak at Arizona State University with Dennis Prager, not exactly the most controversial person, right? Maybe you feel like a disagreement about Deuteronomy or something. I don't know. But I love Dennis, but not exactly controversial. And the professors, right, 33 out of 40 of the professors at Arizona State University said we should not be allowed to come on campus, right? That is not a liberal value. That's a Bolshevik value, right? And you have to wonder what motivates them to want to sign a petition like that to try to prevent that kind of dialogue and discourse from occurring. So, I mean, look, the trajectory right now towards censorship overall is very bad. It's very damaging, and people get angrier, right? So one of the things I'm encouraged is when people that don't agree with me come to events like this, and maybe they'll think a little bit differently about one or two items. I think that de-radicalizes the country. My question always is, have you sat through and listened to somebody where it's their job to defend the worldview? All of our Turning Point kids have. They go to college. They do it every single day, right? And so the question is, have people on the left done that? And I think that's what very healthy. And look, when people are very angry and frustrated, they listen to demagogues more. And free speech is not just, you know, it's not just fun, as I mentioned. Free speech is very healing because I believe it appeals to people's reason, and it appeals to their ability to make informed decisions, and inherently will de-radicalize a country. And the problem is, one of the reasons why the American right was so upset, and I was with them in the post-2020 election, is that we had the FBI colluding with Twitter to cover up the Hunter Biden laptop story. We had 50 intel agency officials say that it was Russian disinformation. Mark Zuckerberg stifled it and censored it. I go through the whole list, right? Many of you know this. Some of you might not. And that is one of the most flagrant and unforgivable actions of election interference in our country's history. And so don't be shocked when people get very brazen and upset after that. So anyway, thank you so much.
Hi. like everyone here, I believe in free speech very strongly. But my question is, to what extent could we allow people, specifically on public college campuses, specifically people at pro-Hamas rallies, to be allowed to shout phrases like "from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," and "gas the Jews, genocide the Jews"? I would never want to censor them, but at the same time, they are spreading hateful messages. What should we do in response?
Smart question. First of all, if they're here on a foreign student visa, they should be deported back to their country. So that's not a speech. That's just a terrorist supporting issue. But my line to use force to shut them up would be very, very direct and sight. I'll be, for example, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They have a right to say that. I would not use police force to shut them up. If a sign says, "let's go kill Jews," yeah, that's direct incitement of violence. I haven't seen that sign here. I did see it in Australia where they were marching in the streets, "gas the Jews, gas the Jews, gas the Jews." That's unacceptable. That's a direct action towards incitement. And Dershowitz was the one that wrote a lot of he argued it for the precedent. I have a very, very, very high bar to use police force to shut people up, because every single day people are trying to shut me up, saying that I'm hateful and that I'm bigoted or spreading disinformation. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Thanks so much for coming out. And you mentioned earlier in your talk that 8 million people have illegally immigrated to this country since Biden took office.
Yeah.
Ish, right? Which is extremely concerning for national security reasons, among many other. But given the rapid demographic change this country has experienced and the consequent destruction of American identity, would you support a reduction or even a complete moratorium on legal immigration?
Yep. Moratorium. I've said that before. Yep.
Awesome.
Thank you. And by the way, I'll say this. Every American student should be put ahead of a foreign student. Here's the thing. You guys are going to have a harder time than I'm just going to use a reason for here. If you are an American student, it's harder than ever for you to do very basic things. By the way, this is not a right or left issue. We're sitting on a potential Russian revolution right now, because you're about to have 50 million young people that own nothing. They might be able to pay for rent. every dollar is going towards their living expenses, and they're not getting married and not having children. That is a political thermonuclear bomb that is about to detonate. You have 50 million people that don't own property and they're not getting married and they don't have kids. So why should we bring in foreign workers while our own students can't find jobs? We have a moral obligation to try to raise the wages and the standard of living of our citizens first, and then we can start talking about increasing legal immigration after that. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Kirk. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I have more of a question that's more of a historical question. The Democrats and left, they claim that Abraham Lincoln in today's America would be a liberal progressive. And they base this claim on the fact that Abraham Lincoln wanted to abolish slavery, which was a radical idea, and it was against the traditional at the time. And furthermore, that he was more for the federal government and not for states' rights. And, you know, that was with the Civil War. Do they have any – is there any basis on this claim? As you know, if you go to the Democratic headquarters in Washington, D.C., they have Lincoln up there. So
do they really?
Oh, they do. They have a big statue of Lincoln.
He's the first Republican. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay.
They're half right. I mean, Lincoln and Joe Biden share some things in common. I mean, Lincoln suspended habeas corpus, which I don't think was great, but he was at war, so you can make an argument there. Lincoln also didn't necessarily treat Native American people very well. But no, honestly, Lincoln is a hero. He's one of my I could go through all the negatives. By the way, any historical figure, there are negatives, okay? Moses, there were negatives. He complained too much, okay? Seriously, I mean, this is what drives me crazy about the removal of statues and the changing of our history, okay? Churchill, Lincoln, Washington were flawed people that did heroic and courageous and amazing things. But yes, I can isolate and nitpick. Let's first be honest about Lincoln. He was a man willing for the times. He definitely, I will acknowledge, he bent the Constitution to be able to solve major macro unprecedented crises to keep the Union together. Abraham Lincoln was a lot like Donald Trump, though, in nationalist populist economic policy. Tariffs, American workers first, make stuff here in this country. Also understand, Lincoln held a Democratic election during a civil war. Not that this is a Democrat, it's something else. Zelensky won't hold elections right now in Ukraine. Lincoln held an election in the midst of a war. Pretty amazing when you think about it. So, but here's the more important thing about Lincoln. We need to take a step back. Lincoln was a very deep thinker. He didn't go to college, so I have a soft spot for him. He learned his worldview from Shakespeare and reading the Bible. He was a railroad lawyer before he became a member of the Congress and, of course, president. Is that Lincoln never gave up. And Lincoln lived a very tough life. Lincoln suffered from depression. He had his head kicked in at a young age that actually blacked him out from a horse. Lincoln lost a son at war. His wife was nuts. That's not a joke. She was really something else. And he never gave up. I think Lincoln is a great role model of a man who stepped up for the time that he did not personally invite. Lincoln did not want to have to be a leader presiding over a country that was losing hundreds of thousands of citizens on both sides, right, and trying to remedy that. But Lincoln was the leader that we needed. And same with Churchill. Churchill was not the leader that people necessarily wanted before or after the war. But praise God that Churchill was in power at that particular time. I will say this, though. Lincoln, he desired and looked at human beings in the essence, in the promise of the Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, out of many one. The American left does not believe in e pluribus unum. They believe in white privilege or in black power or in critical race theory. So the promise and the principles of Lincoln that we still hold to this day to try to strive towards some sort of colorblind, character-based moral society, that has no home right now in the American left. And I think the Democrats should take down Abraham Lincoln in their headquarters in D.C. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. First things first, I'd like to say thank you so much, Mr. Kirk, for coming here. I'm not actually a student at UCLA. I go to the LMU. It's a smaller private Jesuit school. Yeah. I figured that we'd be less pro-Hamas than some of the other, like, Harvard schools just because of the nature. But recently we had a protest where people were holding signs saying, quote, resistance is justified when people are occupied, presumably in relation to what happened on October 7th. I was just wondering, because I studied abroad with some of these people and they're good people, how do we de-radicalize them?
And that's at LMU?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So let me get this straight. So resistance is justified when you are occupied, essentially?
Yes.
That is so morally sick, I'll be very honest, to say that going to a concert and taking hostages, by the way, there's still 200 hostages, of which they won't tell us how many Americans are still being held hostage. Like, newsflash, there's probably 20 American passport holders that are still being held hostage right now in Gaza, just so we're all keeping track here. This involves America, just before anyone else says anything different. Here's what I can't. One of the casualties of the left, one of many, is the cheapening of language. Racism. Everyone's a racist, right? It's ridiculous. Insurrection. Terrorism. We have overused the terrorist label the last couple of years. Would you agree? So it doesn't hit the same way. If there was ever a time to label something terrorism, it's when a bunch of maniacs go on the holiest day of the Jewish calendar and go in and put babies in oven and chop people's heads off and mow down people at a concert. I guarantee almost everyone in this audience has been to a concert of one shape or form. What do you imagine what that would be like if people just came over the hill and started opening fire on every single one of you? That's not resistance. That is attempted genocide. It is morally sick for your classmates to say that. They might be good people, but that does nothing for me. I'll be very honest. Don't tell me how good you are while you're supporting the modern day actions of Arab Hitler. Thank you very much.
This is with regards to your comments about, like, the wokest set of ideals. Mm-hmm. So if the oppressor-oppressed mentality is so dangerous to our society, how is that supposed to be changed, right? You preach the value of produce more than you complain. So what can we produce to change the worldview of the younger generation?
Yeah, it's really important. Every single person in this room can produce two things immediately that will de-radicalize you. You could produce a marriage and children. Now, you do those two things, all of a sudden you're like, yeah, I'm all in for burning the Wendy's, but my kids got to go to bed. People that pay mortgages are less likely to loot. Just kind of common sense type stuff. My worldview is not that complicated right now. I want more people to own stuff, to be married, and have children. That's not that overly complicated. First of all, I think they're moral goods. I know that bad ideas start to evaporate when you're concerned with feeding a 9-month-old. I could tell you from personal experience, okay? And once they start walking, it's completely it's like the game is over, right? What I'm getting at also is we need to stop teaching it in schools, stop subsidizing it in colleges, stop making it a national ideology, and we have to do a much better job of encouraging gratitude and appreciation when we see success, not resentment and envy. It is easy to have envy. It is hard to be grateful. It is. It takes effort. If you see somebody that has something you want and you go to Bel Air and you see a big house, it does not take effort to say, I wish I had that house. They probably are a really, really bad person. And I'll use this example again. We need to teach and instruct and lift up someone that would look at their house and say, boy, I wonder how many weekends away from home that they sacrificed. I wonder how many red-eye flights they took. I wonder if they had to go into their savings double or triple. How many hit pieces they had to endure from dishonest journalists. How many employees that they had to fire and then rehire just to barely make payroll. What I'm getting at is that it is so simple. It is shallow, quite honest, to look at success and act as if they're nothing more than people that just either stumbled into it or born into it. And that's a small subset. In a market economy, though, all of us have something to learn by people that have been able to climb that ladder. That's hard, though, especially of an entire nation that is built right now on resentment. Resentment gets you rewards right now. You get rewards if you are the most talented person that communicates resentment. And I think that's something worth thinking about. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. I had a question. If you had 5 minutes with Margaret Sanger, what would you say?
Only 5 minutes? Yeah. Okay, if you don't know who Margaret Sanger is, she's the founder of Planned Parenthood. She was an outspoken eugenicist, believed in racial hierarchy and supremacy. She looked at abortion as a means to institute a white-only type nation. She believed blacks to be inferior. She is the founder of Planned Parenthood. That's not an exaggeration. You can look it up. I think they re-put it up, but on the website of Planned Parenthood, they used to have Margaret Sanger. She's like this big defender of all this. So, and by the way, I hate to say this, her vision has largely been fulfilled. 58% of all abortions are done by black people in this country. And black people compose 14% of the population, 7% of them are female, and half of them are infant-bearing age. So 3% of the population is 58% of all the abortions. That's something to think about. I mean, honestly, if I had 5 minutes with Margaret Sanger, I would try to preach the gospel to her. I mean, honestly, if you could save her, you'd be able to save limitless amounts of people. Thank you very much.
Hi, I want to say thanks for being here. Please use my pronouns, dude, Richie, guy, bro, what's up?
Cool.
I agree with like probably 98% of your stuff. This is very rare that I don't. Common sense ain't that common, and people don't want to put their ass into their work, and it shows. I never collected unemployment. I don't believe in all that crap. But anyway, bottom point is, I got twins, 16, and thank God they're out of the age where they're indoctrinated by the schools, because they've shown me some of the stuff that's come up. I'm in Simi Valley.
Yeah,
we're kind of a tight-knit community, so it gets out if something goes wrong. That's been changed. But in explaining to my daughters, we started talking about the Gaza and Palestine, and they brought up the word Zionist.
Yep.
And they go, what do you think? I go, well, look it up. And they said, well, someone believes in Malena. That's the promised land. I'm like, well, shit. That kind of makes me a Zionist. I go, but I don't think it's the same context. I was hoping that you could elaborate.
Yeah, okay, a couple things. Yeah, so like, what is a Zionist? I mean, there's a lot of different answers to that. Herzl was the first person to come up with this idea of Zionism. So I want to be very clear. I'm not an apologist for everything the Israeli government does. I even sent out a tweet that the IDF responded to where I didn't like that they hit a church in Gaza. I didn't like that, and they responded, and I thought that was constructive. With that being said, we don't have to overthink it. It's very simple. The Jews deserve a homeland. That you have 40-plus Arab Muslim-majority countries in the world, and the Jews deserve one place that they can call home. And that it's very simple. And the moral argument is this, is that Jews scattered around the world are hunted down. They are targeted. You see it in America. You see it in Australia. You see it in Europe. And the promise after the Holocaust was never again, and that we are going to have a homeland that we can defend. Now, they will say that it's an illegally created country. That is not true. You might morally not agree with it, but it was not illegally founded. It was done with the Balfour Declaration. There was a Arab state that was proposed and a Jewish state that was proposed. Half of the world's Jewry live in Israel, which has its problems. I will fully acknowledge that. But the promise of Israel is a very simple one, which is, why is it that a country that is one-fifth the size of Florida, that has a functioning economy, you know, all three monotheistic religions represented in their government, has sovereign borders, is able to have some form or fashion of freedom of press and media with some issues, why is this the obsession, the pathological obsession with every Muslim in the Middle East? And they say, oh, it's about Jerusalem because, you know, we believe that, you know, Prophet Muhammad ascended there. Well, Jordan controls the Temple Mount. So that's a silly argument. And I'll be very honest. It's the very same playbook I see unfolding here with the American Democrat Party. And this is going to sound radical, which is you have a bunch of illegitimate leaders that don't want to deliver results for their constituency. So they need a people to blame. So they blame the Jews professionally. And it's exactly what the American left does with conservatives. They call us fascists all day long. And for that, we have something really in common. So, look, there's a lot of people that use Zionism as a slur. I'm not an apologist for the Israeli government. I'm happy to go through things that I disagree with them on that I wish they wouldn't have done. But the best way I can summarize what Zionism is that Jews deserve a homeland the same way that Muslims have 40 majority Arab Muslim countries in the Middle East. Thank you very much. Thank you.
One quick question. Is it?
Sorry, we got to get to the next question. Okay. I'm sorry, ma'am. Right. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm so happy you're here. I'm from Santa Barbara, and I heard you were coming down here, and I raced down here.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for being here.
What response? what response can I give to anyone who asks me, how could I agree with your views about strengthening the borders and the southern border when my family, including my mom, came into the country illegally? Even though, like, you know, she became successful, I still agree with what you say, and she may not, and family that came illegally may not.
You know, it's amazing. First of all, your life is a lot more than what your parents did. That you are your own sovereign person. I love people so much that, to be honest with you, I want to protect the country that you came to. And I think that's why you agree with what I did, with what I've been saying. And so I think I want to just reiterate something, though, that you agree with what I said and your parents, you know, your parents came here illegally. That speaks very highly of you. I have to be very honest. I'm incredibly impressed. That's a big deal. And I'm really impressed that you want this country to remain as strong as possible. And I think, you know, you're not the first person to have said this. Somebody came up to the event. They said, Charlie came into this country illegally. You know, I think we should close the border and, you know, deport people that came here illegally. I said, that's really interesting. And it's also, it's about the welfare of the nation you care about, really, when it comes down to it. So I don't think it's hypocrisy at all. You want what's best for America. You want what's best for the nation. And I also just think it's, again, I will repeat what I said. It would be easy for you to say, I don't agree with what he's rationally presenting because, you know, of a bias I have with my parents. What is right, regardless of what your parents do or do not do. And so God bless you for holding that position. And I'll be honest, like, if somebody breaks a law, the question is, do they want that law repealed? And if they say no, then it actually says a lot about their character. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming here, Charlie, and speaking with us. I want to open by saying my question is pertinent to my own situation, I guess, because I am currently in the Marine Corps. But
thank you for your service.
My hair is out of regulation right now, but you have to believe me. So you commented on not playing the victim in life, which is something I learned through my experience in the Marine Corps. But it seems that given the current situation, the attacks on October 7th, I feel like the Nation of Israel might have been has been doing that in sense of referring to the attacks as Israel's 9/11 while simultaneously funding Hamas. If this is Israel's 9/11, which we used our own 9/11 to fund decades of war to fill the pockets of military contractors, how do we look at what's going on right now and avoid making the same mistake?
Yeah, I get that question. So I want to make sure I'm very morally clear here. Sometimes you are a victim, right? If you get shot on the streets of L.A., you are a victim. The problem is we have a supply and demand problem with victimology in the West. We have a bunch of people that are incredibly blessed walking around acting like victims because somebody said something that offended them, okay? So, of course, sometimes you are a victim. When you wake up on your holiest day and 1,500 of your fellow Jews are slaughtered, yeah, that you are the victim of terrorism. I'll just be very honest. And that's the equivalent of 50,000 Americans. So, and I will also say, though, that to Israel's credit, they're taking matters into their own hands. And while they are trying to, of course, encourage and increase sympathy for their cause, it's now Hamas that's playing the victim. It's now Hamas that says, oh, stop bombing us, stop doing all this. And I'll be honest, it falls on deaf ears for me. It's like, wait a second, did you not launch an unprompted attack into civilian corridors, into homes and schools and nurseries on a holy day? So, you know, spare me your caterwauling. You guys were the ones that launched this war, and war is nasty, war is awful, and they're saying they'll do it again. The Hamas leader comes out and he says, just a matter of time till every single day is October 7th. To your point, which I really resonate with, is that I'm not a neoconservative. I do not believe our foreign policy should be an instrument to remake foreign countries in a quote-unquote Western image. I think that the Iraq and the Afghanistan war teaches us that. And I think we need to be – that's why in my remarks I emphasize the border, what's happening in our own country. We need to balance what's happening in Israel, which is obviously important, but also understand that we have some serious problems here in this country. And I do not like when leaders focus more time, energy, and attention on foreign conflicts than our own. Putting the Israel one aside, I think it is indefensible that people in both political parties have spent $200 billion on the Russian-Ukraine war, and we can't get a border wall financed to prevent people from coming into our country. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for coming. I'm a huge fan. Yesterday, I was bored in class, so I decided to go to the bathroom. And
it's a great trick. I've used it many times.
As I was on the urinal, I saw a sticker above the urinal that said, "Do not deposit menstrual hygiene products in the toilet. Use container provided for this purpose, UCLA sticker." What does this mean for school, and especially in California moving forward, especially like 20 years from now? What's going to happen? I don't want my kids raised here in school. I feel bad for everyone. All you guys that are going to stay in LA and are going to have to go through this.
So you're getting out. Yeah.
I'm right after I graduate. I'm finishing early so I can move to Florida.
Yeah. God bless you. Yeah. I mean, I could make kind of a smart aleck joke. That's a get out of Dodge type sign, right? I mean, at that point, you say reason is no more. I got to go to Fort Lauderdale, right? I mean, at that point, you're just, I mean, it is, how did we get here, though? A very, very vocal minority that prioritizes feelings over reality will not stop till they conquer every square inch of our being. No, really, like, what does that sign accomplish exactly? It's a reminder. It's a reminder to you. It's a reminder that they're in charge and you better not misgender them. It's a reminder that you better not question them coming after children. That is not about hygiene products. No, no, no. That right there is no different than conquered land. Flags, we're in charge. When you conquer an enemy territory, you fly the flag. And it now looks like a warning that says, please dispose your feminine products in a men's room. Please.
What is the equivalent going to be of this in 20 years from now? Because it's just getting more and more every year.
I mean, look, there's two authors that haven't been wrong yet. Orwell is the most quoted. Huxley is the least quoted. Read Aldous Huxley's book, Brave New World, and it's not good. It is the complete demolition of sexual boundaries and barriers, no differences between men and women, the mass medication of society that they call soma in the book Brave New World. Everybody belongs to everybody is the phrase that they would use in Huxley's world. It's dystopian. And if you the argument some people make, but Charlie, how does that bother you? How does that sign impact you? I don't like lies, and you shouldn't either. That right there is a lie against nature. It's a lie against goodness and decency. And again, it's also an intentional provocation. They're trying to provoke people to act insane and to act in a certain way. Again, as a reminder that they're in charge and you aren't. Where does it go in 20 years? Where does it go in 2 years, man? I mean, we have people at the White House that are, you know, stripping down as trans people on the front lawn with two pride flags and the American flag in the middle. I have no idea where it heads, but we're just beginning that descent into moral abyss and chaos. All the more reason why we need more events like this and people to speak out. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, how's it going, Charlie?
Man, that hair is so impressive, I got to tell you.
Thank you very much.
That's like Will Ferrell. Like, that's awesome.
I was called Richard Simmons the other day, but that's not. I didn't take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah.
So I'm a believer in Western secular values. I don't believe in a theocracy or an ethno-state, and I believe that Israel should have a right to defend itself. But you said that the Jewish people should have a right to a state, and yet part of a lot of the conservative support for Israel has come from the fact that they are a Western country in the Middle East, or at least that they share values with the United States. How can you support a theocracy or an ethno-state in the Middle East while still saying that the reason that we should support it is because it has Western values? And in addition to that, would you, if you had to continue funding Israel, would you make the funding contingent on them changing the 70-30 law, which keeps the population of Israel at 70% Jewish people, 30% non-Jewish people, things like the admissions committees law, tax laws, residency laws, et cetera?
Well, no, answer is no. The question is, do you want it to remain a Jewish state? You remove those things, it would no longer be a Jewish state. My language was very specific. I said the Jews deserve a homeland, right? And they do. They deserve a place, a gathering, a state. You could, and all those words are interchangeable. It's fine. But I think it's very important to reiterate that. Secondly, you ask, well, how could I support Israel? Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily – I'll be honest. There's a lot that Israel does I don't like. I don't like that they're having these massive gay, you know, gay pride parades in downtown Tel Aviv. I think that's a bad argument to support Israel, to be honest. No, I think – honestly, I have Israel envy in a lot of different ways, though. I love that they have borders. I love that they're able to deport people that come to their country and mean them harm, which is what they did to a bunch of African migrants that started looting in downtown Tel Aviv. They're like, oh, immigrants' rights. Like, they deported them immediately. So, look – Israel was constituted as a Jewish state, explicitly as a Jewish state, which is both ethnic and religious. And put all of the things aside, you and I would both agree that it's probably a good idea not to interfere with a country that rightfully is able to win over land after they've been attacked. You would agree with that, right? For example, we shouldn't give back Texas to Mexico, stuff like that, right?
Not necessarily, but I'm sure the point of your argument, I'm sure you agree.
Again, California shouldn't be part of, you know, things like that. Israel was attacked from every direction right at their founding in 1948, and they fought and won. They earned that homeland, and they were attacked again in the Six-Day War. They were attacked again in 1973, right? And they fought and won. So they've proven the ability to not just exist, but to earn the right to have the nation as constituted as it is. So you have a follow-up? Yeah.
Because in every single Arab-Israeli war, they won with massive amounts of funding from France, Britain, and the U.S. Does that make a difference to you, or do you think that we should – how does that change your thought process, or does it not change it at all?
It doesn't change it. No. It doesn't change it. Look, I'll reiterate this, is that the Jews have a rightful place to their homeland, that there's massive amounts of – there are, again, 40 Arab countries, of which – it's very funny. I will not you, but some people say, well, I want Palestine to be free. Okay, what country in the Middle East is the model for freedom? Like, maybe you could tell me. I don't know, like Saudi Arabia? Like,
well, yeah, so if you're talking about individual rights, which I don't think is on the table, then most countries in the Middle East are free. Like, they have sovereignty, right?
Oh, okay, so if it's sovereignty, I mean, I will say, how did Gaza not have sovereignty on October 6th? Like, yeah, what...
So Israel obviously controlled basically everything surrounding Gaza. Their maritime their airspace, the embargo, their trade.
Well, Israel's embargoed by Arab countries all the time. We wouldn't say Israel is...
Israel isn't essentially landlocked by Israel.
No, they are. Israel's landlocked by adversarial Arab countries. Of course they are.
Yeah, but Gaza doesn't have billions of dollars of funding from...
No, they have hundreds of millions, you're right, from the West.
Yeah, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding that goes straight to Hamas. That's not used for humanitarian aid. So it's used for rockets and military weaponry.
We agree then, right. So, yeah. But let me ask you this. If Israel's mission is to liberate the people of Gaza from Hamas, do you support that?
I believe the question was, you said, should Palestine be free?
Well, the question is, what do you mean by free? I think it's funny that we're being lectured by Arab Muslims about freedom. Where, like, what are you, like, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Oman, like, Jordan, Egypt? Like, what exactly is the beacon of freedom in the Middle East?
What they're trying to say is they
don't want Israel to be in charge, which is, again, that's what you had on October 6th. They had their own government. They had their own elections that they decided to no longer do. They had hundreds of millions of dollars in Western support. They could have instituted a free market economy with private property rights. And the blockade thing is weak. Israel is blockaded by dozens of countries all the time. BDS are literal sanctions on Israel. So if sanctions and embargoes make a country poorer, then why on earth was Israel so successful? No, it's because the government of Gaza refused and never wanted to actually take responsibility for their citizens, Hamas. They'd rather just use it as a nonstop terroristic military operation against the people of Israel. Jews.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hello, Charlie. Why do you think U.S. is putting more interest in Israel than the suffering oldest Christian country in the world? Is it because Israel is serving more purpose for the U.S. interest in the region, or is it just a coincidence?
It's largely because of Turkey. First of all, I stand with Armenia 100%. It's so wrong what's happening to Armenia. It's unbelievable. It's so wrong. There was an Armenian genocide, and Turkish money, influence, and lobbying has tried to whitewash it out of history. And it's one of the sickest things that have happened. And we need to make – so it's because of Turkey, 100%. Turkey's part of NATO, so we play footsie with Turkey. Whether Turkey should be part of NATO or not is a completely separate topic. I think it's kind of silly that you have a NATO member that is that, you know, militantly Islamist. But honestly, too, the Azerbaijan lobby is incredibly powerful in Washington, D.C. And Armenia's kind of become this forgotten country. Armenian Christians are being cleansed by neighbors literally in Azerbaijan. And I had a guest on our podcast. We talk about it. Look, it's Israel gets a lot of the attention in the headlines. Just so everyone knows, 120,000 Christians were displaced from their homeland in Armenia forcefully by Azerbaijan recently. So I'm right there with you. But you should ask Cenk Unger or whatever his name is, why he doesn't support Armenia and why he's named his media organization after something that's the moral equivalent of Hitler Youth.
I'm a Kurd, by the way. I'm a Kurd, so.
Oh, you're a Kurd. Still,
yeah.
God bless you. Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll take a couple more, everybody. If you disagree, come to the front of the line. We'll take a couple more. You guys have been so patient. You guys have been awesome.
Hi. I currently go to UCLA, and I'm a transfer student. And when I transferred here last year, I had so many friends and even joined a sorority. But once they found out I was Republican, they completely dropped me. And now I still have, honestly, like, no friends here. I was wondering if you have any advice. Yeah. I was wondering if you have any advice for Republican students that go to liberal schools like UCLA.
Well, you got to meet our Turning Point USA chapter right here. They do such a great job. Yeah, I mean, girls can be very nasty. I got to be honest. That is, it's wrong that you're treated that way. But no, we'd be happy to help you at Turning Point USA. This is not going to be comforting, but long-term it will. It's a good thing that happened. First of all, it will make you tougher. Second of all, you'll pick your friends now based on a value system, and you'll have true friends that see the world the way you do. Which I want to be very clear. It is bad for humanity that you can't have friends with different political views. I think that is a very disappointing and honestly, if we as conservatives drop friends because of their political views, that's not acceptable. I don't see it happening. Whenever I ask young people, they say, oh, you know, do you have any liberal friends? Oh, I used to. They stopped being friends. I'm sure you guys are all that way, right? That is the opposite of tolerance. So meet some of our Turning Point kids. Be happy to help you. Thank you. All right, we'll do two more.
All right, Charlie. My name is Jonathan Valencia. I'm 21 years old. It's an honor to be right here.
Thank you.
I have a brief question. How do we get the young people, especially like my generation, you know, probably the most arrogant and ignorant ever in the history of the U.S.? Well, the question is, how do we get these people to start caring about the country where we live instead of caring about foreign problems? I get it, Israel, Palestine, Ukraine, all that stuff, but come on, man. We got, like, narcos roaming around, thugs. We all live in SoCal. Every block has more than two homeless. Like, come on, that's horrible. But I guess let's care about outside countries. I'm a Hispanic, and I still agree that the borders should be closed. Like, any country should have borders, you know? And to top off, I know my parents are Salvadorians. I know you know Nayib Bukele. I know you know him.
Yeah, there's a lot of gangbangers that are now in prison now because.
Exactly.
Do you like what he's doing?
I love it, even though they say, oh, he's so harsh. I don't care. Now the country's awesome. You can party at 3 a.m. Come on.
So, first of all, let me just say, you represent a window into something very exciting happening in this country, which is Hispanics are moving in the conservative direction in record numbers. And it is really amazing. And you're people of faith, hardworking, and also just common sense. But the issue that I want to just implore conservatives to get right on is crime. Hispanic families came to this country, some of them from Central America, from very dangerous countries. And they don't want to raise their kids in an equally as dangerous country, where you have to pay off the cartel guy, where you have to have the right person. That is not why a lot of people came here. And as long as the left is for, you know, opening up prisons and relaxing this stuff, I think they're going to keep on losing with Hispanics big time. And I think you could tell me, is the idea that men give birth popular in the El Salvadorian community?
I think if I said that at dinner with my parents, they'll probably kick me out.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the windows that I think we need to look through very carefully, is that white upper middle class college-educated wokeism is not consistent with the values of Hispanic and Black Americans. And we're finally seeing that come to a surface, where people that have an attachment to traditional normal values that didn't necessarily go to Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Stanford are saying, that makes no sense. Why don't we have a border? And they're tired of being like, oh, you're a racist. Like, and then you say, no, actually, you know, I'm El Salvadorian, right? And final thought.
Well, Charlie, just keep doing what you're doing. If you were to be president, you'd be the best president ever.
Oh, you're very
good. And I want to say, make America great again. San Salvadoreños for Trump.
All right. I think we have one more. This will be the final question. Great. I love that. It's amazing. Yes.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for coming, by the way. And interesting, I have to say, I'm what we would consider progressive, so, but I always try to come and hear what other people want to say and think. Anyway, you made a claim that the family is the bedrock of a civilized society or a productive society. How do you define a family? Because in the 250,000 years that humans have existed on this planet, the nuclear family, where you had a single breadwinner, 2.6 children, and a white picket fence, is barely 100 years old. It's a post-war phenomena based on the wealth after World War II. So would you consider a family, a same-sex couple, for example, a legitimate family that provides this bedrock for society? And also, you know, we can also remember that interracial families were once illegal as well, you know, so the idea of a family has changed in human history. It used to be extended. Anyway, your thoughts on what the family is.
Thanks. So first, has it changed? Well, you disappeared. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
No, it's okay. I mean, in the Ten Commandments, what does it say about family?
Well, in the Bible, one of the main characters in the Bible not only had many wives and
Solomon.
Consorts,
yeah.
Polygamy was a big thing in the Bible.
So it didn't end well for Solomon. In fact, the lesson is it ended in madness and disarray and despair. And it's quite a lesson that, you know, do not engage in your moral impulses. But what I'm saying is I'm just rejecting a little bit what you're saying. The nuclear family, honor your mother and father. That's the first time in an ancient text, by the way, where both the mother and father were equals. The family goes all the way back to creation. So it's not this new phenomenon. It literally says honor both your mother and father. Marriage is a human universal. And, yeah, like I'm pro-traditional marriage, if that's your question. I believe that marriage is one man, one woman, if that's your question.
But so you're also limiting that to the definition of a family, right? Because pre-World War II, a family was multi-generational. They had cousins and so on living, and also in many human cultures, and you can find this through like Jared Diamond's research and so on. He's a UCLA professor. The kids were cared for by a communal relationship among the women. The family was not one man and one woman. It was, you know, one man and a few women. That has been a characteristic of families in history all over the world, they were successful families as well. I mean, I'm sorry, successful societies were based on that kind of principle.
Which society?
Egypt.
Egypt was
Greek.
a successful society.
How do you define success? I mean, it existed for 2,000 years. The Greek society existed for 1,000 years. They didn't have any problems with homosexuality.
Well, yeah, they did.
not entirely. We can go. There's a lot of history there that we could go through. But the point is, the idea of this one man, one woman concept.
Well, hold on. I mean, I don't want to go too deep into this, but Western society is built on monogamy. The Romans believed in monogamy, just so we're clear, and all of Christian society is built. I don't want to go too far into this, but let's just kind of build out one thing, and then we can leave it and just have clarity and not agreement. Is that all of that's a fun philosophical debate, but what's happening here is a completely new phenomenon, which is very important to pinpoint, which is that the kid has no parent. We could talk about, you know, community or, you know, the uncle and the aunt and the grandfather raising the child, which, by the way, I kind of support the intergenerational home for the record. I think it's pretty awesome. I think it's one of the things that we've lost where we just kind of put our elderly into a home. I think that's actually a really moral, let's just say, retreat. But I will just mention what's happening now is 75% of black youth are raised without a father in the home. Is that a concern for you? As a progressive,
Yes, of course it's a concern because okay. I think that there's economic handicaps that occur from those situations. However, do you discount that
you don't have to be rich to stay with the person you impregnate?
Do you discount that a single female can raise a successful a member of the society?
Of course they can, but you know because you're well read. That a single female is more likely to have a child that ends up in prison, does not graduate high school, and joins a gang because they need a father figure around. Dad's there to say no. Dad is there to raise both a woman in many different ways, but more than not, to find the type of ideal man that one day she might marry and spend the rest of her life with, and to raise a son to say no to his aggression and his sexual impulses and desires, and to raise with discipline and self-control. God bless single mothers. Of course they are. But every single metric shows that single mothers are not just overwhelmed, that the children that they raise are more likely to engage in the habits that we don't like.
All right. But I think single mothers in this society don't have the resources they could.
No, that's not true. We give them $70,000 to $80,000 a year in benefits. It's not a thing about stuff.
Where do you get that statistic?
The federal government. What do you think SNAP, Medicaid, housing, urban development, the annualized cost of a benefit is inflation adjusted is $70,000 a year.
Look, the people that get the most welfare in this country are
don't change the topic.
White.
No. I'm on to you. Don't do that.
Hold on
a second.
But SNAP
time out.
Is welfare.
You know who? Right. But you know, I just want to say, do you agree with Barack Obama, yes or no, that black dads not being around has been a moral disgrace in the black community?
I don't know if I would use those a moral disgrace. I think it's a problem that needs solving, and I think there are economic reasons why that is occurring.
Is it,
more
or is
so
it cultural?
Moral.
In the black community, is it acceptable for a man to stay an infant and impregnate a woman and abandon that woman? That's a cultural problem in the black community. There's entire rap genres built around that.
Okay.
It is not in other cultures, specifically Asian cultures, let's use that one, it is shameful to impregnate a woman and to abandon that woman. It is considered normal in mainstream black society for a black man to impregnate a female and never see her again. And there's a lot of suffering because of that. And we have a choice. Do we pander to those blacks and say, let's just give you more stuff? Or we say, you know what? No, it's not acceptable, black men, to go around and spread your seed and not be around with your partner and raise that son or daughter to be a person filled with virtue and discipline.
Let me follow up. There are lots of single white men, lots of single men of all races
of
who abandon their children.
Blacks do it 75% of the time. That's the focus of every major institution. We burned down the Summer of Love, Floydapalooza. We're going to do reparations here in California. Okay, if everything's going to be about race, game on. Why don't you talk about why black men don't stay with the women they impregnate? If the whole country is configured about affirmative action and more black pilots and white people can't get into this school, all right, you guys want to talk about that? Why don't you go to the one thing that could actually solve black poverty that works in the Asian community, in the Jewish community, in the Vietnamese community, every community, which is dads stay around.
I think that you're pointing to the wrong cause of that in many cases.
What is the cause?
I believe that there's systemic racism in the society that causes some of it. Not all of it. Okay. I'll give you an example.
What can I do that a black person can't do?
Okay. When black criminals, with black defendants, let's call them defendants, this is a statistic. I don't have the exact numbers. But when an African-American defendant comes in front of a judge, they are less likely to be able to plead down their case from a felony to a misdemeanor. Now, when you get a felony on your record, that is the beginning of serious problems, economic problems for that person. They can't get a job. They can't get good jobs because if you're a felon, you're restricted from a lot of opportunities in this culture. And again, the justice department, the justice system across the United States is shown to give less leniency towards African-American defendants. That's a fact. And once you start on that economic path, that's why you have, in some cases, not all, I'm not going to sit there and be an apologist for every African-American male, but I will say there are aspects of this society that damage those people.
So it's about quality of legal representation that transcends color. If LeBron James, his son, Bronny James, was brought in charge for a felony charge, he'd have great legal representation and the color would mean nothing. You would agree? Yes. Yeah, so
I definitely agree.
Okay, a poor white person in Bakersfield who might be brought up for a felony charge, who might not have good legal representation, very well might have the same difficulty that someone from Compton does. So we have a choice. How about this? Instead of saying, you know, they really get different sentencing, how about this? Stop committing crimes. Like, oh, I feel so bad that, you know, this guy, I know he shot up a home and killed two people, but he really got a tougher sentence than the white guy. Like, yeah, you're not winning me over with that, actually. Here's the thing. 50%+ of all murders are done by black men. They are 7% of the population, and they do more than half of all the killing in this country. I am not going to pander and use, oh, I feel your pain and white privilege and sentencing stuff. How about you stop murdering so many people?
I totally agree. They commit a crime. They do the time. Okay, I'm not excusing that fact. But when you have a justice system, and we're not talking about murders, we're not talking about those crimes. We're talking about, in many cases, petty theft or theft of some sort.
We don't even prosecute that anymore.
Okay, that may be changing. I'm saying the statistics show that the justice system in this country harms minorities more than
because they commit more crimes.
They come up for the same crime.
Really? Yes. What percentage of murders do white males commit?
I'm not talking about murders.
That's a pretty important one, isn't it? How about arson? What percentage of arson or robbery or rape?
I'm talking about.
I could go through the whole list, and I'm not saying that blacks are doing it because they're black. I'm saying they're doing it when you don't have a father around, you are more likely to enter that cycle of violence. So we go back to where we started.
All right, no,
okay, thank you very much. We don't see things the same way. Thank you. Okay. Well, that was fun, everybody. So mostly peaceful, as they would say. I love this country. I want to thank you guys for sitting through all this. A final thing. I know there's a lot of unease. People say, Charlie, what can I do? I've done everything. I've come to a turning point event. I've bought the pillow. I've done everything that has been asked of me. By the way, promo code Kirk at mypillow.com. We need decent and good people to fight. Never give up. Never give in. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder
just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns. What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.